One of the things that certainly I think was missed by me, I'll be honest, when it first came out was the new target that China has set, where from its peak, they want to reduce emissions by 7 to 10% by 2035. That's basically the equivalent of fully decarbonizing Australia, not once, not twice, but three times. So they are moving full steam ahead on their decarbonization journey.
Welcome to The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, Executive Director of Media at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land and we pay our respects to the traditional custodians of country and elders past, present, and emerging. Today, we're joined by Mike Harut, Partner and Responsible Investment Manager at Monroe Partners. We're going to discuss the myths about renewables and explore what's next for sustainable investing. Mike, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's start first with Monroe Partners. Can you tell us a little bit more about it for those who are unfamiliar with the fund?
Monroe Partners is a global growth equities fund manager. All we do is global growth equities, which means that we focus on structural changes happening in the world today. Some of those we almost sort of take for granted. For example, the long-term shift from cash payments to card payments. More recently, AI is one of the themes or areas of interest that we look at and invest into.
Uh-huh.
But one of those structural changes is decarbonization and the planet's move. Well, the global society's move to decarbonize the planet. And so that's the reason why we invest in decarbonization opportunities and into renewables. It's not necessarily motivated by an ethical or quote-unquote sustainability-driven investment approach. Those are things that we think about, but our primary motivation is to look at structural changes happening in the world and invest into those structural changes. As I said, one of those big ones that we see over many decades happening is around decarbonization. And so we have investments in that decarbonization theme across all of our funds. And we also have a dedicated Climate Change Leaders Fund, which invests exclusively into that theme. And then within that, we look at four areas, which are clean energy, clean transport, the circular economy, and energy efficiency. So it's a broad opportunity. Renewables are one of those. But yeah, maybe I'll leave it there and then we can dig into whatever you'd like.
It's really exciting to know that you are, first and foremost, a global growth equities fund. But for this episode, I thought we could focus on the renewable sector. So I know that it's just one under the umbrella of the many things that you do. But let's start with a look back at how the renewable sector performed last year in the context of the U.S. government, for example, reversing a lot of the favorable renewables policy from the previous government.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that there are many misconceptions in this area. And certainly one of those is that, you know, the Trump administration comes in, you see all of these headlines that they're pulling out of the Paris Agreement, that, you know, there's all these pauses on offshore wind projects, et cetera, et cetera. There's this perception that 2025 was no more investment in renewables now that the administration is in power.
Right.
But actually, when you look at like the data underlying this around where is electricity, new electricity generation coming from in the US, we've got the latest numbers now between January and September, and around 89%, 88, 89% of new generation in the US was renewable. So that is actually one of these sort of misconceptions that I'd love to kind of go into with you why that's happening. And then also beyond that as well, there's a perception as well that investment in the energy transition has stalled. But again, if you look at, and we don't actually have the 2025 numbers yet, but if you look at Bloomberg New Energy Finance, for example, you'll see that each year we're still hitting new records around investment into the energy transition. You know, the US is obviously just one of many, many countries, and it's certainly not the biggest emitter today. So one of the things that certainly I think was missed by me, I'll be honest, when it first came out was the new target that China has set, where from its peak, they want to reduce emissions by 7 to 10% by 2035. That's basically the equivalent of fully decarbonizing Australia, not once, not twice, but three times. So they are moving full steam ahead on their decarbonization journey. And renewables are very important, but batteries are also increasingly important. So they have a target effectively to double the amount of battery storage in China by 2027. And why are they doing that? Because it helps to stabilize the grid. It's a source of dispatchable power. And they have so much solar there at the moment that they're actually wasting a whole bunch of it as well. So yeah, I think those are some of the sort of misconceptions. Like in the US, it hasn't fallen over. And I think we should also look beyond the US as well.
Now, I like the fact that you've been very honest and you said, even I missed it. But I think a lot of people missed it. We were so focused on what's happening in the US naturally, because when the US sneezes, everyone catches a cold. But now suddenly the conversations are different. So going back to what you've just said, one, the new capacity additions in the US was actually quite healthy and robust last year. You're saying 88, 89%. Mm-hmm. Why was there such a disconnect? I mean, I remember talking to people back in March, April last year, and they were like, there's been some kind of hesitation to invest in a way that people had planned. Yeah. So there was a lot of everything's on ice. But now you're telling me 12 months on, mm-hmm. the facts aren't quite as bad.
So probably there are a few reasons for this. One of those, which I think we'll touch on, is this huge underlying shift which is happening, which is the demand side of things. So for about 20 years, there was very, very little growth in the amount of, in the demand for electricity in the US. I'd say the two main reasons for that are energy efficiency, so using energy more effectively, and the other is effectively, you know, heavy energy users in the US in things like manufacturing, over time shifting to China. So between 2005 and 2025, roughly 10%, not per annum, but like 10% total increase in electricity demand. Now we think that that is changing. So that demand is there, which means that you need more new generation. And the question is, where is that new generation going to come from? So even in a very hostile sort of political environment that the Trump administration has created, I think one useful little acronym to use is TINA. There is no alternative. So if you look at, and I'd really encourage people to have a look at this, but NextEra Energy, which is one of the US, the largest utilities in the US, mm-hmm. they had a capital markets day in December where they really talked a lot about this, where they sort of say, if you want to deploy new electricity today, you almost have no choice but to use renewables. The reason for that is that the equipment availability on a gas peaker, for example, is 4 years. If you want to build new nuclear, you know, there's a lot of hype around nuclear and new nuclear. We're not necessarily against any of that, but, you know, these new SMRs are certainly not going to be coming before 2030, or at least very unlikely that they'll come before 2030. And so what does that leave you with? That leaves you with effectively renewables. And the other thing I think that's happened in 2025 is, yes, there were very generous subsidies that the Biden administration put in for renewables and EVs and all sorts of things. Trump has obviously wound a lot of that back. But first of all, a lot of it has these kind of grandfathering periods, or safe harbors as they call them in the US, which means you can still take advantage of those credits probably up until the end of the decade if you had planned ahead. Mm-hmm. Also, it's just a simple question of cost. So again, I really encourage people to look at NextEra's Capital Markets Day slides, where they talk about, you know, even without subsidies, you know, wind and solar effectively are cheaper than natural gas combined cycle, let alone small modular reactors. So I think all of those factors together, you know, the demand for electricity, the fact that new gas is going to take a long time because of these long order times for new gas turbines, and then simply the cost, all of those things have really led us to this underlying result, essentially, which is that despite all this kind of talk of a green new scam, et cetera, the actual new generation going in is, you know, large majority is renewable.
This is the first time I've heard of TINA, as the acronym, and now I can't forget it. Unforget it. I want to go back to China because you mentioned the reshoring from China. But the other thing you mentioned, if I've got this right, is that it feels like the bark is worse than the bite, if you like, where there's a lot of headline concerns, but in reality, there's just so much demand. And I know that you've written a paper where you said that there's been a demand inflection for the first time in 20 years. Mm-hmm. So can you explain that?
Yeah, so I sort of alluded to parts of this earlier, but really from our perspective, we think that there are three reasons why demand for electricity in the next 20 years is going to be different to what it has been in the last 20 years. So as I said, in the last 20 years, roughly a 10% total increase in demand. So that's less than 1% per year. Why? Because industries were leaving the US and because of energy efficiency. Going forward, we think that there are at least three reasons why we're going to see demand inflecting. One of those is the data centers. Frankly, the US is trying to win the AI race, so they need a lot of data centers, which require a lot of electricity. And I think one point that sometimes gets missed is the customers, like these big hyperscalers, Microsoft, Google, Meta, that want to build these data centers or also have, I would say, very ambitious climate change targets. So I think that's also kind of positive, not just for electricity demand, but for clean, low carbon electricity demand. So data centers is one. The reshoring is the other one, where the US is trying to effectively bring industries back into the US. And that's part of the sort of jobs agenda, et cetera, and also the geopolitical strategy that they have with China.
Mm-hmm.
And the third reason is electrification. So if you add, one of the companies that we invest in gave us this statistic where if you add an electric vehicle, if you had two electric vehicles to your house, you'd basically double your electricity consumption. As well, obviously, if you change out your gas boiler to an electricity-based heating and cooling, you increase your electricity use. So that electrification obviously will happen a little bit more slowly now. There are fewer subsidies for electric vehicles and so forth, but that is another driver, we think, of electricity demand going forward. So in that context, those three things, the data centers, electrification, reshoring, again, I'm going back to the same slides, but there are many people that have made this prediction, which is that, if you go forward 20 years, that kind of growth rate, which was less than 1%, is going to be six, maybe seven times what it was in the past. So you'll get like a 60% increase versus a 10% increase, which is what we've historically had. And really, again, for that Tina reason, at least in the short term, that demand needs to be met with renewables primarily.
And so now let's go to China, where you said earlier, everyone missed the memo that China's revised its targets and it is on track. Can you explain that and why that is beneficial to investors in general?
We have found it, I must admit, difficult to find good companies to invest in China. Primarily our exposure is to US companies. But as I said earlier, China does have this target that by 2035, they want to reduce the absolute emissions between 7 and 10%, which again, given their context of how much they actually emit, is a huge, huge number. One of the things specifically that they've called out is around ESS, or effectively batteries for the electricity grid. And so therefore, one of the opportunities that we really like is a company called CATL, which is the world's largest battery maker. They make batteries for all sorts of things. One of those is electric vehicles, which is probably the main use of their batteries today. But an increasing one, and one that we think will actually grow faster than EV batteries, at least in the shorter term, is batteries for the electricity grid or these energy storage batteries. And so within China's opportunity set, for us, we really think that CATL and batteries is one of those things that we think will have that growth that we're looking for as effectively as growth investors.
So now that we are talking about performance of companies, and you've just mentioned a couple of stocks there, I want to focus on the performance of the Monroe Climate Change Leaders Fund. I know it's just one of the many funds that you have, but last year it returned 22%, which is an amazing return, regardless of how you feel about sustainability. So what drove that performance, and can you share examples of what of the kind of stocks in this fund?
Yeah. So I think, I won't really go into it in a huge amount of detail, but I think what drove the performance is what drives the performance across all of our portfolios, which is we have the same process across all of our funds. And so just because this is a climate change leaders or climate change opportunities sort of focused fund, it doesn't mean that we do anything really differently. So we're effectively looking in all cases for stocks that kind of meet our investment criteria and our investment process. So it's a very much sort of a bottom-up opportunity set. So we don't just say we like solar, we like wind, or we like EVs. Let's buy all of the companies that are in this space. We look at every stock bottom-up. Now, to answer your specific question, I'd say probably there were sort of three sets of companies that really drove the performance. Two of the companies that were really strong performers for us were GE Vernova and Siemens Energy. These are both, I guess if you were running a purely ethical fund, perhaps these companies might not actually be in there because a part of their business is around making some of this gas turbines and gas equipment. But the majority of the revenues comes from wind and effectively what we would say like power, electricity grid equipment. So if you think about this inflection of electricity demand, which I talked about, that grid equipment is going to be very valuable. And throughout that 20-year period where there wasn't a lot of grid investment happening, frankly, there was a replacement, obviously, but not a lot of investment to kind of catch that inflection in demand, those electricity grid equipment companies didn't really perform that well and didn't really invest in new capacity. So now that this sort of has shifted in terms of more electricity demand, you're seeing more demand for the sorts of products that GE Vernova and Siemens Energy makes. The second one which contributed to our performance was a company called Constellation Energy. Now, again, I think maybe to some, I suppose, who are more ethically minded, this company might be a little bit controversial again. So this company owns the largest fleet of nuclear power stations in the US. So these are existing, many of them very old, multi-decade-old nuclear power stations. We put it into the fund because the fact is that generating electricity using nuclear energy is effectively carbon-free. That's the sort of language that they use. There are all sorts of other issues with nuclear energy, which I'm happy to go into and that we engage very actively with the companies on. But from the perspective of its decarbonization credentials, we think nuclear clearly fits. So the reason why that stock has performed well is to kind of go back to these hyperscalers and these companies like Microsoft, Google, Meta that have a lot of ambition around AI, which means they need a lot of data centers, which means that they need a lot of baseload power. And baseload power is effectively power that runs throughout the entire day. Because they also have targets around decarbonizing, they're also interested in carbon-free power. And so what we've seen is that the electrons essentially generated by Constellation Energy are increasingly valuable in a world where you have all of these sort of underlying demand variables for baseload and carbon-free power. So that company continues to do really well. We've profiled them in our responsible investment report a couple of years running, where we've talked about their our engagement with them on nuclear safety, nuclear waste, etc. So I'll leave people to look at that. And the final one I'd say is CATL, again, which I mentioned earlier, the Chinese battery maker. Really, I think that Chinese sort of policy around not just the sort of 7 to 10%, but then the ESS batteries, those kind of grid storage battery targets has really led to that stock performing really, really well. And probably just the final point I'd make is, we have a lot of this sort of information on our website, so monroepartners.com, so people can go and have a look at the website for more of these sort of stock stories and things like that. And we're just about to publish our one for the last quarter, which will have two, I think, quite interesting stories in there as well.
So, Mike, that's really great to hear about the Climate Change Leaders Fund performing incredibly well and with the insights behind those stocks. So just to wrap up, in a word, what do you think is the outlook for the renewables and sustainable sector this year? Good, bad, or indifferent?
Well, our view is good, absolutely good. And again, those areas that I outlined before, the grid, the companies that make the equipment for it, the companies that have the workforce to deploy it, energy storage, energy efficiency, all of those things we think will be performing very well. But you need to be selective. And we think that some of the more challenging areas, like the actual renewables equipment companies, will continue to be challenged, not because that these areas aren't growing, but because the profitability for these companies has been hard to come by. And that probably goes for electric vehicles as well. But we do have information on our website that my colleague James put together on our outlook. So I'll leave it there and people can search for that as well if they like.
Fantastic. We'll add the link to your website in our show notes. Once again, Mike, great insights. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
This is The Greener Way. I'm Michelle Baltazar. Thank you for listening.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.